and welcome to our Insulin Resistance Solution Practitioner Training. This is our first rounds with Dr. Rita Marie Call, and this is a treat for me to be here with all of you. I'm excited that you joined us. I know we had our kickoff call last week. We had a lot of people on that call, and a lot of you decided to just go ahead and say yes to yourselves, to your clients, and to getting started now. I know getting started on a program in the middle of summer is not always the easiest thing to do, and I applaud you on making that decision. So we're here for our Insulin Resistance Solution Practitioner Training. It's a mouthful. We call it IRSPT for short. We'll probably just call it IR, Insulin Resistance. IRS is a little bit confusing because that doesn't have a very good connotation to most of us here in the U.S. because that's the people who audit us anyway. But we are here for our Insulin Resistance Solution Practitioner Training. And tonight's call and all of these rounds calls are about me giving you, not going over all the information that's on the website. I've given you a lot of good information already. It's giving you a tour of what I've given you already, giving you some insight in as to how to approach your client. And you can go back and learn the theories and all the details on the web, because I've put up videos. There's a couple more videos that are soon going to be there. I've got some audios. I've got checklists. I've got recipe guides. And I'm going to go through what all is there and let you know what is okay for you to use with your clients and what I require you to do some modification and make it your own in order to use it with your clients. So that'll be really clear by the end of tonight. And the purpose of this call is to get really clear on what our first module is, what I've included in there for you, the checklist of things that you can print off and check off as you go through, because we've had a lot of requests for that, and where to start. So let's begin. I always like to begin with this slide, and I'm modeling this for you. You can, if you're doing online stuff, you can start with a slide like this. It's a disclaimer slide. If you're working with people in the office, I highly recommend that you have it as part of their intake forms, that you have them fill out something and sign something that says that they understand that what you're providing is education, that you're not diagnosing and you're not treating, and that your care is meant to be in conjunction with a qualified health professional if they're under the care of a doctor, not instead of. Unless, of course, you are a doctor or you are a nurse practitioner of some sort, that you have the license to diagnose and treat. Those are words we don't use unless you have the license for it. As long as you don't use those words, you are providing education for people. You are helping people to see some of the things that might be going on for them, what some of the pathways in their body and some of their different labs that might not be in an optimal range, and educate them as to why that might not be. But you're not giving them medical advice, and you're not giving them diagnosis. And you want to be really clear with that. Somebody asked, well, you know, I'm not a licensed professional. I can't read labs. You can read labs just as well as anybody, and by the time you're finished with this, and if you've been through any of my other programs, you probably read labs better than most doctors do, because you're looking for functional changes, and you're looking for things that you can teach, note the word teach, your clients to do before they develop a disease. So there's no need to diagnose anything. You're looking for patterns that suggest that they're on the path, and they're going to love you for it. They're going to absolutely love you for it, because you're going to change the way they feel, you're going to change the way they look. They're going to be empowered, and they're going to refer everybody to you because of the great results they get. Okay? I was talking to somebody today who said, you know, you should tell the people that you're working with this. I keep getting these requests for private consultations, and I just don't know what to do because I don't have time. I have a very busy schedule. I have as many private people as I can work with within the scope of my schedule, yet we're continuing to get requests. That's why I'm teaching these classes, because I want to have others that I can refer people to when they come to me and they want to talk about their belly fat and they want to talk about their insulin resistance and their thyroid problem and their adrenal problem. So So I'm excited to share this information with you so that someday you're going to get to the point, and probably not the not too far future, that the results you're getting are so amazing that you're getting to the point of being too full. And that's what we're here for, not for the point of being too full, but from the standpoint of reaching as many people as you possibly can. And I started this program because I wanted to reach as many people as I could, and I realized that I alone couldn't do it. One-on-one, I was limited. I couldn't do it with that many people. Started the Before Be Gone program to reach more people. Again, that's not a program where I can take thousands of people through at a time. So I can reach exponentially more people and help people to get true health, to get true education that's going to help them to balance their bodies in a way that's so profound that they're going to get the results. And I can do that exponentially through you. And that's why I'm here for you. I want to share with you what I've learned over the last 25 years and make it succinct and easy for you to follow. So before we get started fully into the content, the meat, the juice of it, I want to go through some housekeeping. The first thing is we have a schedule. Yes, we do have a schedule. It's posted on your website. You may have had some difficulty getting into the website today or the last few days. We are working feverishly with multiple levels of support, and today we were told that it was fixed, and then it was slower than it was before. So I think it's come back somewhat today because we back-leveled something, but we are working on getting that to be much snappier and also on moving the practitioner programs off onto their own site. So all of that is happening. We are here to provide you with a lot of great data, lots of videos, and we need a website to be able to do that. So I just wanted to make sure I said that. I also want to make sure that you know right here at the beginning that there is a place on the side, on the left-hand side of your screen, where you can click and you can get a copy of the slides. If you're new to this kind of format, this instant teleseminar, you'll see two different things on the side. I'm going to bring it up so I can see it. As you're on the web, you're looking to the left. It says welcome. It says listen in, and then it says slides. If you click slides there, that's going to bring up the slides on your screen. Turn down my volume so I don't hear myself. Okay. That'll bring up the slides that I'm sharing with you on the screen. Okay. If you're not seeing anything when you do that, if you're on the phone, click synchronize slides with phone and you'll see the slides pop up. That's usually what I do. And the slides come up. And you'll see the slides as I'm presenting them, okay? So that's what I'd like you to do. Also, though, below that, there's something that says ask a question. Most of you have figured out how to do that. You just pop your question into the box that shows up below. Below that, though, it says slides full page. That's a PDF document, and that PDF document has copies of all my slides, and that's one per page. Slides four per page is to give you the opportunity to have a paper-friendly, a printer-friendly version of that where there's four slides per page. So that quarters the amount of paper and ink that you use to print those off. And then the third thing on that list is lab testing, and later on in the program tonight, I'm going to ask you to be opening that and having a look at that. So if you want to download that now or have it on your screen in another window or print it, why don't you go ahead and do that now so that you'll have that available for you when we get further along. And then below that is IRSPT dashboard. If you click on that, that should bring you into the program. It will bring you to the insulin resistance dashboard if you're already logged in. If you takes you to a screen that says you've tried to access protected content, it means that the system logged you out. Even if you didn't log yourself out, there's some sort of timeout thing, and you just need to log back in again. And when you log back in again, you should get into the dashboard. Okay. I'm going to be showing you some of the things and the documents that are on there, so it's not absolutely mandatory for you to be on this system right now. You could be sitting there on your phone and relaxing out, catching a sunset or whatever while you're listening. You don't have to be there. Everything that I'm sharing with you tonight is going to be on the website. You'll be able to access the slides. You'll be able to access the video recording of it so you could watch again. And you'll be able to access an audio-only version of it. So we give you things in lots of different ways. When you get to the website, you'll be able to find the schedule by clicking on the schedule and recordings page. We put both the schedule and the recordings on the same page so that there's a list of calls, and when that call is over, we will immediately replace that link with the link to the recording. Well, maybe not immediately. On these calls, they will be immediately available. Generally, what we do if there's places where we need to edit or add things or change things, we go in and edit them, and those are usually available about a week later. But these calls, you can come right back right after this call and click on that same link in the email that sent you here today, and that will get you into the replay. So if you come on late and you miss something, no big deal. Okay, so our calls are all at 7 p.m. Central Time. That's 5 o'clock on the Pacific Coast. That's 8 o'clock on the East Coast, Mountain Coast. Some of you guys are on Pacific and some of you are on Mountain. So hit or miss whether you're in Arizona or Colorado, but that's a 6 o'clock on that coast. If you're in Europe, it's something like 3 in the morning. And if you're in Australia, it's probably 1 in the afternoon. So just to give you a general idea of where those time zones fall. The calls are not all on the same night of the week. We had to fit this in with other scheduled things that had already been scheduled. So we have next week's call is on a Thursday. The week after is on a Wednesday, the 11th. And then the fourth call is on the 17th, a Tuesday, and then the fifth call is on Monday, the 30th. We will release new modules approximately the week of those calls, hopefully before the call. In some cases, it might be after the call, especially next week, since my program manager is out for the week. She's moving, and she is not going to have internet service back until Wednesday or Thursday. So she probably won't get up there unless I get ambitious and put it up there in the meantime. And that will be. But you've got plenty to keep you busy with part one that's now open. And I'm going to share with you the important salient points of how you can get started with handling, managing your client who you suspect has insulin resistance. And even further, how you can determine whether you suspect it or not yet, whether that person is a good candidate for this through some of the evaluations that I've put together and that I use personally with my private clients as well as with in my group program, in my Before Be Gone program. So at any point, if you need to ask a question, I recommend that you raise your hand. I won't be taking questions in between unless they come to a logical spot. It's easier to just go all the way through and then ask questions, but there may be a couple of logical breakpoints where I'll ask you, hey, is that clear? Do you have any questions? If you want to ask your question on the phone, you raise your hand with a star 2. If you want to ask your question on the web, then you type in your question where it says questions. Now, for those of you who are further tech savvy and would like to have a place where you could chat with others on the call at the same time, where you could type in your questions and I can answer you or one of my other practitioners who's doing this for the second time can answer, then you can go to meetwithdrritamarie.com. Meet, the word meet, M-E-E-T, with, the word with, DrRitaMarie.com, meetwithdrritamarie.com, and that will take you to a place where we could do screen share. We're not going to do screen share tonight because we have these slides, and you won't have sound. I deliberately did not turn the sound on over there. You'll just be able to chat with people on the line if you so choose. All right. Is everybody ready to begin? I want to make sure that everybody's ready. Does anybody have any burning stuff that keeps us from having to get started? Great. Great. Okay. So we're good to go. So let's get started. One of your benefits with this program is that we have a health practitioner Facebook group. It's not one per program. We've put all the health practitioner programs together. So people that were in our client assessment tools program are in the group. People from our year-long certification program are in that group. And people who are in this insulin resistance program are in that group. So you have an invitation. It's on the slide. You can see it on the page in front of you if you're watching from the web. If you have the printed out copies, it's slide number 4. If you open it up in your PDF browser, most likely you'll be able to just click that link. And that link is also on the website. So if you go to the website and you click on resources, it'll say Facebook group. Highly recommend you go there. I'm going to be checking in there on a regular basis, posting things there. If I find interesting articles, I'll post them there. I recommend if any of you find anything of interest that you post them there. If you have particular questions, you post them there. Let's get really active with each other. Let's connect because we can support each other in really profound ways when we use this group. So before, did that get out of order? Yeah, no. Right. So just as a review before we jump in, this is stuff that we talked about on our kickoff call. I want to make sure that this is really clear. It's really, why are we here? We're here to help our clients get their blood sugars under control. And what does that mean to them? That means that they are going to have overall better energy, better mental clarity, get rid of the extra pooch around the middle, and prevent long-term complications like diabetes, cardiovascular disease, cancer, and Alzheimer's. So we're looking to restore normal blood sugar management. And all the tools that I'm going to give you are going to help you to help your client restore their normal blood sugar management. The glands and organs involved are the pancreas, the liver, and the adrenal glands. When your blood sugar gets too high, insulin is secreted to help your body move that sugar out of the bloodstream and into the cells. When the blood sugar gets too low, your pancreas secretes glucagon, which helps you to raise your blood sugar by going to the liver and releasing stored glycogen or stimulating the release of stored fat and turning it into sugar. So this is the way it works. This is the way it's supposed to work. It's supposed to stay steady. You can go 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours between meals and not have blood sugar dips. In fact, that's a healthy person. I get very irritated when I listen to practitioners or read books that they say everybody should be eating every 2 hours to maintain healthy blood sugar levels. That is not a good idea, and we'll be going through more and more of that, especially on our next week's lesson in the nutrition piece next week, and I'll share with you why, the research, why I believe that, and how I think that can be damaging, actually. Yes, if you've got a pathological blood sugar management system and you eat every 2 hours, and especially if you eat, you know, things that are low glycemic and with protein, you will keep your blood sugar steady. But you're not fixing the problem. You should be able to keep it steady regardless. Right? You should be able to make it through a whole night of sleeping and have your blood sugar stay nice and steady because the constant production by the pancreas of either glucose or glucagon or insulin to keep it steady. This whole system is affected by stress, it's affected by diet, and it's affected by genetics. And we're going to be looking at all these factors and talking to you about how you can manage it. And I'm going to take you through one of the stress management pieces when we get to that piece tonight. So just as a reminder, the normal insulin response to food. You eat, your blood sugar rises, your pancreas secretes insulin. Insulin escorts the glucose into the cells. And by the way, that's no easy feat. There's all a bunch of nutrients and chemical processes required for that, which is why it gets broken. The blood glucose decreases. Leptin levels rise and triggers fat burning and decreased appetite so that you can work on your stores. And you're a happy camper. Your insulin stops secreting insulin because the message gets sent that, hey, leptin's here. We don't need insulin anymore. We're in fat burning mode. We don't need to be doing any more insulin. And then the energy increases as a result of that sugar getting into the cell, getting converted to ATP. And then after time, you get hungry again. you eat and the whole process starts all over again. If you get hungry and you choose not to eat, you'll get to see there's actually a very beneficial cascade of hormones that happens if, as long as you don't let it to go too far, that helps you to go into fat burning even more profoundly. And that's a hormone called ghrelin. I'll give you a little hint of what's to come. So you should be able to maintain. And we're going to talk about how you can help your clients to space their meals better. So the key lifestyle areas to address, and we're going to get into some of those tonight. We're going to start a little bit of the nutrition, a little bit of the stress, a lot of the exercise, a little bit of the sleep, and I'll kind of hint at some of the timing. These are all important if you want to get your clients to have good blood pressure, blood sugar management. Okay? It's not enough to just tell them to eat a low glycemic diet, to eat every 2 hours so that their blood sugar doesn't get out of balance, and that's how they handle it. No, those are the people that are progressing into problematic states. So let's review our sessions, our modules. We're calling them parts here. Insulin resistance kickoff last week, we talked about the biochemistry. We talked about the causes of insulin resistance. We talked about the tragedy of insulin resistance. We talked about testing and some of the basic nutrients. We're going to go into all of the stuff we covered last week in more detail through each of the parts. I just wanted to give you a broad brush overview so you had a sense of what's coming. Tonight we're going to review part one, which is already introduced, and there's a module out on your website. Raise your hand if you've already seen that module and have dug into it and taken a look at some of the resources. Raise your hand with a star two. So next week will be part two, and we're going to look at the nutrition protocols. That's always the part that everybody wants to jump right into. Oh, tonight we're going to do insulin resistance, glucose testing. I'm going to go into the details of glucose testing, and I want to look at the fitness protocols and get you started and give you tools that you can use with your clients to help them get this problem handled. Next week we'll do nutrition protocols. In part three, we're going to do emotion, stress, and sleep protocols. Those are really super important. In part four, we're going to go through the Insulin Resistance Balancing Act and a 30-day protocol that I put people through to help rebalance. And then finally in part five, we're going to help you to put together a program, like what are the steps that you're going to go through with people, whether you do one-on-one, whether you do a small group, or whether you do a large group or a virtual group. Okay, and there's going to be plenty of time for questions on every single one of them. If you're working with somebody, and I highly recommend you get started, even if it's somebody in your family, that what you do is you bring some cases to me. If you've done some labs, if you've got some glucose testing charts for them, you bring them to me and we will discuss them and I will help you to make sense of what's going on. And it can even be for you, by the way. If you want to do you as the test case, do some labs, test your glucose, keep track of your food, bring them to the calls and we'll go over them and that will help everybody gain insight in how to do this with their clients. So let's get started with part one, step-by-step, assessment, glucose testing, and fitness protocol. So remember we talked last week that there were five key steps to restoring balance in someone who you suspect has insulin resistance. One is to increase their insulin sensitivity. I'm going to give you the steps that you need to get started with tonight. So if you or someone you're working with or someone in your family that you're suspecting has some insulin resistance going on, and you'll be able to test because I'm giving you an assessment tonight, then you're going to get some protocols to get them started right away. The decrease the insulin need is going to come next week. Comes a little bit tonight with the fitness because we'll see how fitness actually affects some of the mechanisms, but mostly it's going to be next week when we talk about the foods, what foods to avoid and what foods to include. Reducing inflammation, that's going to come in various places throughout the program. Optimizing fat burning and lean muscle mass building, that comes with the fitness piece. but also with the timing piece and the sleep, and I'm going to tie it all together. And then stress, we're going to get started on tonight, and we're going to work on that all along, because I believe that when you get a hit of cortisol in your system, it affects your body as if you just ate a candy bar by raising your blood sugar up and sending an emergency message. I'm going to pause, and I'm going to get some water. I have been talking, it feels like, nonstop all week, and my vocal cords needed a little lubrication. So thank you. All right. So let's talk about the steps that we have in your part one. If you're on the website, go and click on the link that's on the sidebar of this presentation where it says IRSPT dashboard. If you click there across the top, you'll see part one. Go ahead and click that part one. There's also a few things in the before part one that we have you. So under when you hover over that part one, it'll say get started and then part one. You can look at those after the call. And if there's anything in there you haven't done, it's things like join the Facebook group and put our emails in your safe senders list and look at the transforming stress or sign up for the transforming stress videos. We'll give you that option to do that at other times as well. In order to get the big picture, I'd like you to go back, if you haven't already done so, is attend the IRSPT kickoff call, which we had a week ago. Many of you were on it live. Some of you may have missed it live. That's going to give you the big, broad roadmap of where we're going with all this. There's another set of videos which are not yet complete. They're almost complete. And that's going to be videos that talk a little bit more about some of the fitness routines and some other pieces related to getting started. And there's just some orientation stuff, just some good stuff for you to go through. There's a transcript in there, as well as slides, as well as video. I really feel like we learn best when we engage all of our senses, which is why I take the time to do videos and then do all the editing, and it's a time-consuming process, but I feel like when you have those visual triggers, it helps. So these are the two steps in the presentation or the checklist, and actually on the page. So when you go to part one, you're going to see a checklist that you can download. I highly recommend that you download that and print it, and as you go through the different components, you check it off. I'm step by step taking you through a process in this part one for you to get started right away with working with somebody. Even if you don't know what's coming up ahead, you have a friend or somebody that you're close to that you could start working this with, you're going to be good to go. So these are the two video resources that we have in this particular section. The next piece is assessments. So the very first thing you want to do when you are working with somebody is determine if indeed they are a candidate for this kind of work. How do you do that? Well, there's a number of ways to assess. I like to use the insulin resistance assessment online form that we've given you in here. We do have plans for making that a PDF in case you don't like to do online forms. We'll make it a PDF so you can cut and paste that and create your own online form using that. But just as a hint, if you want to create your own insulin resistance assessment form to hand somebody and have them check off right there in your office or that you can send them to over the internet and have them fill out and send back to you, what you can do is go to the page where it says Insulin Resistance Assessment online form and then just select all the questions and copy them into a Word file. You probably have to do a little bit of reformatting and shuffling them around to make it neater, but it's a great way to have your own little assessment. Okay? So that's where I would start. I would start with you. because you might be in for a surprise. If you don't think you have an insulin resistance problem, you may find out that you do, and then you'll be the best test case of all. That's what happened to me. When I first started teaching Before Be Gone, I decided to get a blood sugar meter for myself so that I could do the testing on me and do some videos. And I discovered that I indeed had the problem. So it's not just what you think. It's not just, oh, you see somebody coming. When somebody walks in your office and you see somebody with a big belly in comparison to the rest of them, it's often a surefire sign that they have insulin resistance. Then if they start to tell you, oh, my brain is foggy and I'm tired all the time and I used to be able to remember things and I don't and I've got no energy, it's a good sign they have insulin resistance. Then you ask further questions, things like, do you feel hungry, especially for sweets, even after you've just had a big meal? After you eat, do you feel more tired or do you feel energized? These are some of the questions that are on there. Really key questions to be asking people. Do you get cranky and irritable if you skip a meal? There's all signs of blood sugar imbalance. Not necessarily all related to insulin resistance, but remember we talked about last week that it's all a spectrum. It's kind of like the way I look at the spectrum of neurodevelopmental diseases or disorders. Like ADD, ADHD, Asperger's disease, autism. It's all on a spectrum. This is the blood sugar imbalance spectrum, and it goes from hypoglycemia or reactive hypoglycemia, which means low blood sugar, and then it goes to hyperinsulinemia, where your body's producing too much. Actually, that's usually at the stage of hypoglycemia, that your body ends up producing too much insulin, which makes your body go down. Then you develop insulin resistance from all that insulin in your system. Then you may go on to metabolic syndrome, which is like advanced state insulin resistance, and you add in some of the cardiovascular side effects of the elevated insulin and glucose for so long. And then finally, diabetes. Not everybody progresses all the way to diabetes, but let me tell you, you get somebody who hits metabolic syndrome, it's not good. When they get to insulin resistance, it may not be as dangerous at the present time, but they're leading themselves towards dangerous side effects. So do the test on yourself. Do the test on some of your loved ones. Do the test on as many people as you can to get the experience of interpreting the test. The next way to assess your clients is via lab testing. You may or may not be able to do it, depending on what state you practice in, but most of us can order stuff through directlabs.com. I have a license that allows me to order blood tests directly. I still use directlabs.com because it's much easier to just send somebody there. They handle all the payments. They handle all the orders. I don't have to fill out requisition slips. It's much easier. Directlabs.com, the link for that is in the lab testing PDF document. And if you're watching on the web, on the left-hand side, right below where it says slides for per page, it says lab testing. It's a PDF document. That's a document I gave you last week, and I just put it back up there. And it's also on the website. And we're going to go through that in just a moment. And finally, yeah, so open that up if you have it there, and if not, I'll just talk you through it. Use the short lifestyle assessments from Before Be Gone. You don't have access to those yet because we're still working on the back end of Before Be Gone, which you get as a bonus for this program. But there's some short lifestyle assessments that I really like because it asks people questions about some of the habits that we're going to be asking people to move towards. And asking to see if they already have some of those habits. And there's one for nutrition, one for fitness, one for stress, one for sleep, and one for timing. So you have access to those, and you could use them as you wish. You can create one document for yourself. You can combine them. You can use the questions however you wish and use them with people. Okay? You just can't send them to my website to fill them out because then you won't get the copies of them. I will. Okay, so open up the document that says lab testing. It's either you could do it from the web where you're watching the slide presentation, or you could do it from the membership site. And I think the membership site is back up again. Pull it up and see. Yes. And let me see if it's responding. I know some people were having trouble earlier today. I just clicked to part one. So the lab testing document, make sure that that's open. It starts out at the top. It has a header from Before Be Gone. It's a three-page document. And it says lab testing for insulin resistance and blood sugar dysregulation. If you do the online forum and you see somebody who's at high risk, it's a good idea to get some, if not all, of these tests done. And I'll go through them with you right now to give you an idea of when you would do some and not others. Okay? And it looks like the website is being really slow again. So click on the link on the web page, the Instant Health Seminar event page. Okay? And I'm going to make sure there's no questions before I continue. Good. And all right, I'm going to just check to see if there's questions having access, and then we'll continue. Okay. Lisa says there's no section to bring up printable slides on my site. If you have, where you typed in this question, Lisa, right above that, there is, it says ISPT dashboard, and right above that it says lab testing slides for per page, slides print full page. So if you were able to type in your question, you were able to see that. That's on the Instant Teleseminar page. And we're getting some notice that the website is still giving some trouble. It looks like mine finally opened. It's very slow, but it's working. And there you go. All right. Let's keep going. Let's look at the lab testing. Has everybody got the lab testing, access to the lab testing? Let's see a show of hands. If you have access to the lab testing document, go ahead and raise your hand to start to. And nobody's raising their hands. If you have no idea what I'm talking about and can't find the lab testing document, and you're on the website, the event page, raise your hand. If you're just on the phone, then you're going to have to go into the website or just go back and listen later or take notes. We'll do it the old-fashioned way. Are you guys hearing me? Raise your hand if you're hearing me. Star 2 if you're hearing me. I'm starting to wonder. You're hearing me. Okay.
Yes, we can hear you, and the testing lab document is there on the slide if you just
okay.
Click.
Okay, so you see it on the slide. Okay, great. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Good. All right, then I will continue. You're not going to necessarily do all these. We're going to go through in a little bit how to do the glucose. Fasting glucose in the blood test is pretty much the same as doing it on their little machine. So if you can get people that are willing to do blood sugar testing, it's going to be awesome. But these are the ranges. Anywhere from 75 to 90, probably should be 75 to 89. 90 is starting to get a little higher than I like. When you have somebody whose blood glucose in the fasting range goes above 90, they're starting to get into the stages of insulin resistance. When it goes above 100, they're there. When it goes above 120, they will be diagnosed as diabetic. So best is to keep it in a nice steady state, 75 to 85, some functional medicine practitioners say. I'm okay with up to 89, 75 to 89. I've seen studies that show that when it goes above 90, there's a problem. Fasting insulin is a good thing to do if you want to determine if this person is truly a type 2 diabetic, if a person's diabetic or a type 1, or they're heading towards a problem with insulin resistance versus a problem with not enough insulin. Okay, I've been able to use this. I'd had somebody come in who said that they were told that they were type 2 diabetic. They were on 3 different medications. It wasn't helping. Their blood sugars fasting were still in the 220s, and they were on metformin and other things for insulin resistance. Well, we went and we tested their insulin, their fasting, and their postprandial, meaning after eating insulin, and it was really low. So it was that this person, it wasn't really a type 2 diabetic. It was an autoimmune diabetes. And when we got the person off some of the triggers for that autoimmunity, he managed to get his blood sugars down in the 70s and 80s pretty quickly. So we were able to differentiate that, and the antibodies helped too. Triglycerides. In a person who is just having some early blood sugar dysregulation, you may not see any change at all in triglycerides. HDLs. You want the ratio between the HDLs, the triglycerides and the HDLs, to be less than or equal to 1 to be ideal. So if you've got someone whose triglycerides are 100 and their HDLs are 40, they're probably leaning towards insulin resistance. Okay? If you have somebody triglycerides is above 100, say they're 200, and their HDLs are bound to be under 100, that's a sign of insulin resistance, and it's something that's often overlooked, and you can help people to determine early on whether they have a tendency towards insulin resistance. Most medical practitioners do not know about this. It's usually used by more functional and specialists. We talked last week about hemoglobin A1C. I'm going to review that. That's a measure in your blood of the glycosylated hemoglobin. How many red blood cells are sugar-coated? And that gives you an idea of how long your blood sugar has been elevated and how high it's been elevated. The higher the percentage, the more you've had elevated blood sugars. Okay, and it's usually over the previous 3 months. So you wouldn't do a hemoglobin A1C, put somebody on a protocol and go back and test it a month or two later. 3 to 4 months. Although I will tell you, with this guy who I was just telling you about, he had a hemoglobin A1C at about 10 or 11. He was told he was not going to be able to get his pilot's license back because he had to go back through a physical, and if you were on insulin, you weren't going to get it. And if your hemoglobin A1C was out of control, they weren't going to give him his license. So he was determined, and he did everything I said, and at 6 weeks, he wanted to test his hemoglobin A1C, and I said, I don't know that you're going to see that much of a difference now. We should wait for the 3 months because, it doesn't matter. I'll just see if it's on the path. And his hemoglobin A1C had gone from a 10 to a 7. And 7 is considered well-controlled for diabetics. But if you look on the chart, you'll see that there's a comparison between what does the mean blood sugar at a certain level. So at somebody has a 4, a hemoglobin A1C of 4, that means their average blood sugar was 65. That's kind of low, right? But 4.5 is somewhere in the range of 80, 82. Something like that. That's more something to target for. If their hemoglobin A1C is just right about 5, their average blood sugar is 100. That's really good, because if you figure that they've been low overnight leading up to the fast, and then all of their spikes of insulin, of glucose throughout the day, keeping them at 100 is good. So the range I have written down there is 4.8 to 5.6, and I really think 5.6 is too high. I'm going to have to update this sheet because this is different than my sheet. Let me make a note of that to update this. I did this one a couple of years ago. Ideally, cross that off and write down 4.5 to 5 is really optimal. 4.8 to 5.6 is more the lab range. But I really want to be 4.5 to 5, really well controlled. 5.6 is already at about 118 as an average, and you'll see when we talk about doing a 30-day metabolic reset with your clients that I like you to keep the blood sugars under 110 at all times, and I'll show you a few studies tonight as to why I believe that. So hemoglobin A1C is a great detector. You can do it as a home test. It's not as easy to do as glucose. It's not just a matter of poking your finger, sticking the blood on a little strip, and getting a number. You have to do multiple steps. And I, quite frankly, messed up my first two because I didn't read the instructions carefully enough and I didn't do it right. So, but you can get them. They're not that much. I think it costs a dollar or two less to do a home test versus going into the lab, going to direct labs and get it done. Some of the other tests I put in here are not, you know, they're more extras, like the blood spot fatty acid test by Metametrics. Remember we talked about DHA being one of the key nutrients. The blood spot fatty acid helps you to detect imbalances in omega-3 and 6 that can adversely affect blood sugar. That's a test that's a finger prick test. They order the kit. They do it at home. They send in the card, and it's available at Direct Labs. Nice test. About $120-ish. Vitamin D is super important. Personally, like to see it upwards of 75. A lot of docs are saying, no, it's fine if it's 50. The more research I look at, the more I'm convinced that if you want to improve insulin sensitivity as well as improve thyroid function and improve the ability of your body to respond to autoimmunity and get better adrenal function, you want the numbers to be higher, 75 to 100. Okay. C-peptide, that's something you probably have never heard of before. That's one of the ones I ran on my guy who I suspected didn't really have type 2 diabetes after all. C-peptide is also known as insulin C-peptide or connecting peptide. And that measures the residual beta cell function. Like the beta cells are the cells within the pancreas that produce insulin. If those beta cells have been damaged, destroyed, tired out, worn out, not producing enough, you're going to see low C-peptide levels. The other thing that you can run if you suspect that this person might have an autoimmune diabetes is islet cell antibodies. Your body can actually make antibodies that attack the islet cells of your pancreas. All of these tests are available on Direct Labs. They're a little bit more expensive than the standard like hemoglobin A1C test. The panel can run quite a number of $100, but it's really worthwhile. The other thing is glutamic acid decarboxylase, GAD. That's an enzyme that's produced primarily by your pancreas islet cells. It's actually an enzyme that makes GABA, the neurotransmitter. So it's related both to insulin function and to the production of GABA. Okay, if that is too high, it means that there's a breakdown going on in the pancreas. And finally, we have antibodies that attack insulin antibodies. You want those to be less than 5. If they're greater than 5, then it says your body is having an autoimmune attack. The last test that I have listed on here is the adrenal stress index, because we know that insulin resistance and adrenal stress are very closely linked. So that's an optional test. If you're going to be doing any pre-testing with somebody, highly recommend that you at least get a glucose and hemoglobin A1C, and if you can get them to, and the vitamin D, and if you can get them to swing for the fasting insulin, the triglyceride HDL, so you can calculate the ratio. These are good starting numbers so that you know where they're starting from, and as you guide them through a program, you know whether or not they're improving. So we mentioned that we have a kind of a questionnaire that you can get a score. But symptoms of insulin resistance when they walk in the door, when they start talking to you, these are some of the primary ones. The extra belly fat, low energy, especially after meals. Don't you think you should be energized after you eat a meal? So when you have people who say they're low energy, especially after they eat a meal, they're hungry after they eat a meal, especially if they say they want sweets. They have a mid-afternoon energy slump. That could also be adrenal fatigue, but they're often closely tied together. They have challenge focusing, and they just get really cranky and irritable if they miss the meal. If that's the person that's sitting in front of you, just get them started. Explain to them how this works, and I'll give you the tools that you need to get started with that. This is just a summary sheet of the, did I change it? Oh, I still didn't change that sheet. Sorry about that. I need to change that sheet. The lab marker patterns. It's in front of you. Fasting glucose, this is updated. In a normal person, 75 to 89. In an insulin-resistant person, 90 to 119. Somebody with metabolic syndrome, it's generally going to be above 100. And remember, metabolic syndrome is the combination of insulin resistance with altered blood lipids and also blood pressure. And then diabetes is greater than 120. Your triglycerides, this should be greater than 65 rather than 2 to 5. Insulin resistant, greater than 90, you'll usually see. Metabolic syndrome, greater than 110, same with diabetes. And sometimes you see these hugely elevated. If you see somebody with 165, 250, then you're really clearly going to suspect that there's an insulin resistance issue. The HDL, 50 to 90 is what you're going to see normally. Insulin resistance is going to be less than 65, and it could be as low as 20. Same thing with metabolic syndrome and diabetes, they're going to be below 55. Your fasting insulin, that should be between 2 and 5. Those numbers were transposed between triglycerides and fasting insulin. Okay. And then your insulin resistance greater than 5, depending on the stage they're in. Same thing with metabolic syndrome and diabetes, that number is going to go up. You can see people with a fasting insulin of 300. The other thing to look at is after they've eaten insulin, and I wish that that was something easily we all could do because it'd be really telling. Hemoglobin A1C, I said I like it to be between 4.5 and 5. I like when they get up to 5.3 to 6.5, they're insulin resistant. At 5.3, you're already looking at the average glucose is like in the one teens, so that's not optimal. Metabolic syndrome, it's greater than 5.7, which means it's greater than, let me look that one up again, 5.7 puts us at, let's see, yeah, 5 is 100 and 6 is 135, so 5.7 puts us at somewhere in the 120s, not good, that's as the average, okay? That means fasting plus the spikes after eating, that's not good. And that same thing with diabetes. So let's look. So the first thing you've done, person walks in the door, you're looking and saying, yeah, I think this person's insulin resistant. You've done the kind of physical assessment. You've asked them about their symptoms. You maybe did the insulin resistance questionnaire. Maybe you get good enough that you don't even have to do the questionnaire, but it is a good idea to do because you get an objective number to share with them and to also show them that what you're doing with them is working. Then the next thing that you're going to do, before you start talking to them about getting the sugar out of the diet, before you start talking about all the different things they can do with their diet, because they get scared, they like to run away when you start talking about all the things they can't do. So what I like to do is hit that very first thing we had on our list of the strategies, which is to increase the insulin sensitivity. And the way you do that is with certain supplements. These are the top three. You can go further and go with more of them, whatever you think they're willing to handle. I just wrote a really good article on berberine, lots of good research on berberine, which is in golden seal and Oregon grapefruit and barberry. That is amazing. You can add that. These are all things that help to reset the insulin receptors so that their cravings go down. Because a lot of times what's happened is they're on this high-carbohydrate, sugary diet. They're eating trans fats and other things that damage their insulin receptors. They're low in essential nutrients, minerals especially. Most people in the U.S. anyway are depleted of minerals because soils are so depleted. And their omega-3s are off balance. So that's why these three is where I start, which is chromium, magnesium, and DHA. I've given you a PDF document that's on that module one, part one page. That's a comprehensive supplement PDF. So I talk to you about why these things are important. What's up with chromium? What's up with magnesium? Why is DHA so good? And it lists a bunch of others. You can get started with just these three. You can add some berberine, which has been shown in study after study to help things on many mechanisms of improving it. It helps to improve the way ATP uses energy rather than storing energy, and that's what we want. And it helps with improving the sensitivity of the insulin receptors. It helps to decrease the breakdown of your own, to break down your own muscle tissue, gluconeogenesis for sugar. It really is powerful. And there's a bunch of other nutrients. So your goal is to go through that list and see what makes sense for this person, right? Based on whatever things are going on, based on their diet in general, you make a decision. But at least you need to start them on the chromium, magnesium, and DHA. And what I've noticed in just about everybody who's done this is within a week to 10 days, they're telling me they no longer have all the intense sugar cravings. It really works really, really well. So that's where you start. Okay, don't be tempted to just say, okay, now I'm going to take everything away from you. And yeah, that'll work, but it may not get the compliance that you want to get. You want to work with people in a way that they feel really comfortable. So these are a little bit more information about those top three supplements. Chromium polynicotinate, we like to do 400 micrograms twice a day. You can also have them do 200 micrograms four times a day. You can have them do 800 micrograms once a day. Feel them out as to what you think compliance is going to be for this. I love it when they do it with each meal because that's when it's needed. So there's no need to take the chromium, have it stored in the liver, and then have it pulled out of the liver when they need it at a meal. If they take it right before the meal, then they have it readily available. I've had people who have eaten a meal and gone, whoops, my sugar's going up, taken their chromium and had their sugars go back down to normal pretty quickly. Next week, when we talk more about the nutrition, the diet pieces, we're going to talk about foods that will help them to improve their insulin sensitivity. Specific foods, things like avocado and coconut and carob. And I've got a whole document that I'm going to be sharing with you next week on how all that works. So, chromium is basically a docking molecule. It's what allows the insulin to bind to the receptors on the cell. Without chromium, the insulin can't bind there. For some people, improving their chromium status is enough to make a huge difference in their fasting insulin, their fasting sugar levels. When you have prolonged insulin, when the insulin is high for long periods of time, the insulin's going out and grabbing the stores of chromium from the liver, and it's said to be like strip mining the chromium. And you're wasting all that chromium by having hyperinsulinemia. And we're going to be teaching you how to control hyperinsulinemia to promote chromium sparing rather than chromium excretion. You've got magnesium citrate or magnesium glycinate between 400 and 600 milligrams a day. Insulin is considered like a magnesium diuretic. It causes you to pee away the excess magnesium, pee away a lot of magnesium. Okay, it's wasting it. So these numbers are kind of, they're just general. Magnesium is necessary for the insulin to bind to the cell, similar to the chromium. But everybody is a little bit different. So sometimes people need more than others based on what other things are going on, muscle spasms and injuries and repair and other inflammations and hormone balance. So there's a document that we're going to be giving you next week, which is the magnesium loading process. So next week we'll get into much more detail about all the nutrients and the foods. And there's a document called the magnesium loading. And there's also a vitamin C calibration, and there's also an omega-3 and 6 chart that you're going to get next week that's going to help you to help your clients to balance their sugars. And it's a spreadsheet that you can use with people to help them calculate. Now, a lot of people don't have spreadsheets, so you'll have to print it off or turn it into a PDF for them, and we'll give you a PDF version as well. but it's a really good document for helping them to see that, oh, I've been drinking almond milk like by the quart, and almonds have a 72-to-1 ratio of omega-6 to 3, and I'm supposed to be keeping it no higher than 3-to-1. The spreadsheet will help them to calculate. And I've used it to help me create recipes. And in fact, in the document that you're going to get next week, it's going to have a bunch of spreadsheet pages that have recipes, and then I calculate for you using the spreadsheet itself how much omega-3 and omega-6. So really useful stuff, and it's practical. You know, it's one thing to say, tell your patients to eat more omega-3s and tell them to drink more green smoothies. It's another thing to give them recipes and show them how to do it. You're going to have much better compliance. And finally, DHA, about 200 milligrams twice a day is helpful. DHA can be a fish oil supplement, and for your vegan patients and clients, it's very readily available as an algae-based. I kind of like the algae-based. Has a little bit. I have one that's a lemon flavor, and it's very helpful, very useful, very good. Okay, and also it's good for brain chemistry as a side benefit, because most of them are going to be complaining that they have brain fog. Okay, let's get down and dirty here. Okay, insulin blood sugar testing is really important. I was going to say mandatory. It's not mandatory. Nothing's mandatory. But when you can get your clients to do their blood sugar testing, you are going to have dramatic changes. And a few stories, I have had people who have said, oh, no, I can't do it. Oh, no, I'm afraid. I've walked them through it. I've literally been on the phone with people as they were doing it and saying, okay, now you do this and now you do that. And they finally do it, and then they become obsessive about it when they see how much insight it gives them into the inner workings of their body. That said, I still have several people who have not done it. They just haven't done it. They're just afraid to do it. They kind of tune in. They go on an extremely low glycemic diet. They go to the extremes. They eliminate certain things that maybe they don't have to eliminate, but they're not willing to test. What it does, if you can explain to them that glucose testing is going to give them freedom in going through an insulin reset program. Why? Because if you don't test, then you're just going to tell them, okay, we're going to have you avoid all of these foods because these have the potential to raise your blood sugar. And you'll have them off of all grains and potatoes and sweet potatoes and all fruits. But if they test, then they can include everything that keeps their sugars below 110. And I'll share with you in the video on the page. You just go and watch the video of me doing the testing, really easy, and then charting it and explaining what the charts mean. I'll give you a little bit of an idea here, but I have a really nice little spreadsheet that you're welcome to modify for your own purposes, but use that as a guideline. All right? Really good, really helpful. What I did for myself once I discovered that I had this problem is I printed out a whole stack of those sheets and I stapled them together and I just kept it with me. And after a few weeks, I just had page after page after page of this stuff. But it was real easy and I figured out what I could eat and what I couldn't eat. We'll go through those details. There's some of the details are gone through on the page. There's a video. There's an interpretation video. Really get familiar with this. One thing I would do over the next week is really get familiar with this. Test yourself. If you have a problem, put yourself on those supplements. See how you feel. We'll introduce a few other things to do. Do them yourself. You want to be able to work with people at a pace that they can do. Some people are just going to be, okay, have at it. I'm going to do this. And others are going to, you're going to have to go really slowly with. Okay, I have some people who are just so obsessed with glucose testing that they're constantly testing it. They'll test every 5 minutes if they're testing a food because they want to make sure they don't miss the spike. And other people are saying, well, how many times do I have to do it? Can I just do it once in that first hour? And I explained to you on the video a little bit more. I like to do it in that first hour every 15 minutes, at least the first few times, just so they get the sense of how their body's reacting. And if there's a pattern to it, like their glucose always spikes at 45 minutes, then no problem. It's very easy to do. You basically have this little lancet. It's spring fed. You cock it. I don't know if you can hear it. Let's see. That's cocked. And then you hold it up to your finger and you press the button and a little drop of blood just like that comes out. You put it directly in. You'll see on my video exactly how to do it. I give you resources for this, the ones that I've used and that I've tested and that I enjoy and that have the most economical strips. Glucose testing is not just for diabetics anymore. Okay? It's for the average person who wants optimal health. Now, if you have somebody and or you are testing, you go, well, it just doesn't apply to me. That's good. It doesn't apply to you. It's going to apply to your clients, and you need to be comfortable doing it. You need to be able to show them. If you're doing face-to-face with them, you cannot do it for them unless you're licensed as a phlebotomist or a nurse or a doctor. But you can do it, show them how, and then you can have them do it. I even had a few, when I was seeing people in my office, I would keep a few of these in-house so that I could have them walk away with it. They're very easy to get. You can get them at Walgreens here in the States. I'm not sure if they're as easy in other countries, but this particular brand, the True2Go and the True Results, the two different ones, use the same strips, and those strips are very inexpensive. In fact, I have four new boxes of them sitting here. My husband just walked up and said, hey, I just bought you some new strips. So they're True Test strips. We get them for like $20, $22 on Amazon for 100 of them. And it's really a great skill. This is going to set you apart as a practitioner because most practitioners aren't doing this except with their diabetic patients. And you know what? They're not doing it right with their diabetic patients. They're telling their diabetic patients to test their glucose before a meal and then test it 2 hours after the meal. And get this, they're telling them if your sugar is 140 at 2 hours after your meal, you're okay. They're telling this to diabetics. This is insane, and I'll show you a few slides that show you absolutely why that's so irresponsible. We want to keep it at 110 or below. And I actually, I've been trying to find this site that I found that he was saying, oh no, 110 is too high, 100 or below. And I cannot find the link to that site again. It was an MD. It was a very progressive MD. This is going to set you aside. Okay? You want them to be able to test their stuff and test on before they really start changing their diet. You want to catch them. You want to show them what their current diet's doing to them. Right? If they typically eat donuts and coffee in the morning, have them test after their donuts and coffee. Here's a normal graph, and this I showed you this last week, but it bears repeating. At the bottom, this is both done after giving somebody a high-carbohydrate meal where the straight line is at about 7:30. And these are done with people who are not diabetic. And you'll see that they all have a certain peak where they kind of peak out at similar times. It's within 15 minutes they all peak. But some of them are really high and some of them are really low. You see a lot of people are just, it barely goes up. It goes up 20 points and it comes back down. It never goes in above that one line at the bottom, that kind of golden line. It never goes above, like, where is that, 90? Hard to read. It looks like 90. Never goes above 90, that lower one. Okay, the bottom one is insulin. So insulin numbers and glucose numbers, it's the top one you want to be looking at. We have a lot more detail on this in the presentation. I do a slide presentation in there, in the explanation of how to interpret. And this is comparing, the bottom is somebody after a 5-hour glucose tolerance test. The bottom is the low end. And the minimum, the one minimum and the one max, those are the normal ranges. That's the ranges that people went to. This is after 100 grams of sugar, but some people didn't peaked at 150, okay? At 2 hours, they were down into the 120 range on the high-end people. Most people were below that, and then the others were mildly diabetic or insulin resistant or very severely diabetic up at the top. Again, I explain all this in the videos. Watch them. Great information. I don't want to spend your time now going over it again. You've got it there. But here's the reason we want to do this. So you want to make sure that you know how your glucose is affected by the foods you eat. And it also usually graphs, well, let's go back, pretty closely to blood sugar. The top is blood sugar. The bottom is the glucose. You can usually tell, okay, if they're having a spike in glucose, they're having a spike in insulin, right? Except for certain foods, and this is where you need to be careful. Dairy products produce high insulin response, even though what's called the glycemic index is low. We'll go way into the glycemic index next week. Suffice it to say, my opinion about the glycemic index is it's a moderately useful guideline. It's not science. People will say, I'm going to have a low glycemic sweetener like coconut nectar. Why'd somebody take coconut nectar, put it in a cup of hot water, and drink it as a tea, and her blood sugar shot up to 160? That's not, in my book, low glycemic, right? Blueberries are considered a low glycemic fruit. In fact, they have some substances that help improve insulin sensitivity. But I was not alone in that blueberries made my blood sugar go up. And there were several other people in my very first program when I first discovered my issue that had the same issue. Their blood sugar went up on blueberries. You can't just say, okay, well, you can include blueberries because it's said to be low glycemic. If you truly want to get them results, you want to know what their body's doing with it. But getting back to the dairy products, they produce high insulin response even though they don't raise the blood sugar. So, and they first, when they were studying it, they thought, well, maybe it's just due to lactose. They turned out that it was the amino acids leucine, valine, lysine, and isoleucine are insulinogenic, and they're highest in whey. Protein-rich foods and foods rich in fat and refined carbohydrate caused high insulin responses higher than their glycemic responses. So instead of them being kind of on par, so you could say, oh, that particular food raised blood glucose that high, so therefore it raised the insulin that high, there were certain things that were combination foods that had a lot of protein and fat and refined carb that even though they tested their blood sugar, it didn't go up. So for example, if you say, have somebody take like a Hostess cupcake and they find that their blood sugar doesn't go up that much, their insulin is probably going up real high. It's just that the combination is keeping the blood sugar from going up too high. Doesn't mean it's a good food for them. Okay? That's the other thing. Make sure your people know that when they test a food, just because it doesn't raise their glucose, it doesn't mean it's good for them. It may not be good for them. Protein-rich food. So when you combine protein with carbohydrates, so say you have potatoes and steak, you're going to get less of a glucose rise than you would if you had the potato, more of a glucose rise. Okay, let me say that one again. Sorry, I got myself confused there. When you combine a protein-rich food and a carb-rich food, so for example, you have steak with potato. If you had just the potato, you may see a rapid rise in glucose. When you have it with the steak, the glucose doesn't go as high, but the insulin does. So you can't always say, well, I'm just going to slow this down by adding another food to it. If you're going to take a high glycemic food, it doesn't always work that way, right? And there's some reference there if you want to know more. Blood sugars over 100 cause damage. What? They're telling people that they can have a fasting blood sugar of up to 100, but anytime it goes above 100, it causes damage. What's that all about? This was a study, when was it done? 2004, and it was done on a group of people that had a small amount of beta cell destruction. Not a huge, but they had beta cell destruction, which means that cells in the pancreas, they began to be detectable in people whose blood sugar rose only slightly over 100 milligram on a 2-hour glucose tolerance test. Those are the people at the low end of the spectrum. So this is why, you know, 110 might be a little bit too easy, okay? There's some moderate amount of damage. Now, this isn't saying there's severe damage, but there is some moderate damage even at numbers over 100. See, really ideal would be to keep the numbers from ever going over 100. I tell people when we're doing a metabolic reset, 110 is their max. And if there's any food that makes it go higher than that, they shouldn't be eating it. That doesn't mean they always shouldn't be eating it. As they restore the receptors and they get their diets improved and they get their nutrients improved and they get the receptor, the glucose sensitivity up with exercise, things are going to change. This was really frightening. More than 60% of retinopathy. Retinopathy is pathology to the retina that occurs as a diabetic complication. More than 60% were among patients where their fasting glucose levels were below 126. Remember, they're diagnosing people as diabetics once it hits 120, but over 60% of them already have retinopathy by the time they are getting diagnosed, or pretty close. Some, 7.4%, so this is it's not an insignificant percent, up to 13%, not an insignificant percent, that had retinopathy when their glucose levels were stayed below 100. So you really, it's really taking care with this, not taking it lightly. They say, I had a bowl of fruit and my sugar went up to 150, but it came down pretty quickly. It's still causing damage. So really harp on them that, we'll go through this in more detail. As they're going through the metabolic reset, we want them to keep their sugars at 110 or below. So the next piece in your checklist, it's a 12-step checklist. It's the Inspired Health Vision System. What's that? Somebody asked a question, are we allowed to use your meditations? This is heart math. This is something I learned from heart math. I created those 30 days based on just doing it for me and knowing that people would do benefit from hearing it. Everybody that listens to it says, oh, my God, it's really, really effective. It really helps. So you are welcome. We are going to have a product available where you can actually get people, if you want them to have those recordings, that you can have them purchase those recordings, because that's not something that you can just share with them. However, you can make some yourself. Listen to my 30 days, practice it. You don't have to make 30 days. You can make a 2 or 3 days recording. Record it. Guide them through it. Guide them through it in the office. Once you listen to me enough and you do it enough. So let's take a couple of minutes to just do this, because I think that we all should be doing this regularly throughout our day. So let's start. So the purpose is to help your clients. You know, I jumped ahead of myself. I'll come back to this slide. Okay. I was just talking about the transforming stress. So everything that I just said about that was transforming stress. We want you to sign up for the transforming stress system and practice it so you can teach your clients. They can lower their cortisol levels, decrease their blood glucose, improve their insulin sensitivity. Have you some other thing that you're really good at and that you teach? Teach them that. Yoga, meditation, tapping. The thing I like about the transforming stress system is that it only takes just a couple of minutes. Whereas for yoga, meditation, tapping, those are more time-consuming investments. I gave you a link to heartmath.org for additional information, and there's a link on the site where you can go ahead and sign up for my 30 days of transforming stress audios. You can download them to your computer. There's little transcripts if you do better by reading, but I would say do it. Let's do it, and then we'll go back to where we were a few minutes ago. So take a couple of long, slow, deep breaths. Hand over your heart. Hand over your belly. So I like to do right hand over my heart, left hand over my belly. I like to take some long, slow, deep breaths in and out. And just that alone shifts your energy. You notice that? So breathe in a few times, breathing as if you're breathing right into your heart. And then on the next breath, breathe in something that you love. Breathe in something that gives you joy. Breathe in a memory of a person, a place, a pet that you are hanging out with and you're just loving it. I personally go to the beach. I like to call these mini vacations. Just take a little mini vacation throughout the day. I like to go to the beach, and I recreate the whole thing with the sight and the sounds and the feeling on my skin. the more you recreate it, the deeper it will go. And when your nervous system and brain perceive it, they won't know the difference between reality and fantasy, which is great news. So just allow yourself to just feel that sense of deep love and appreciation. Just allow yourself to be. And then take one more long, slow, deep breath. And then come back. That was a very abbreviated version of it to show you how abbreviated it can be. I sometimes do them in one or two breaths. I just say, my system's used to it, and I go there. Listen to the tapes, play them, share them with your clients, or share the concepts with your clients. Go to HeartMath, there's some tools there that you can use. But this is great stuff. This is at the crux of getting the glucose in balance. I have had people in my Before Be Gone program who have said that whenever they've done something silly and their blood sugar went up, that they could bring it down by doing 10 or 15 minutes of this. Really cool stuff. The Inspired Health Vision System is something I'm sharing with you. It's just to inspire you to really focus with your clients on their mindset. You want them to create a mindset for healing. You want them to be feeling like what the work they're doing with you isn't going to be encouraging them towards their goal and a vision that they have for themselves. And help them create a vision. Sometimes they can't do it. So, yeah, I'm going to lose weight. What happens when you lose weight? Well, I'll be able to do this. And help them, guide them. Use the things I've shared with you in here to just help them, because when they create that vision of what it's going to be like to be in that vibrant and healthy body and how unstoppable they are, they're going to be more committed to following your program. And then when you get them to set goals, you can have them set mini goals for like the first month of working together. You can have them set a long-term goal. I'll sometimes say, well, what's your five-year goal? Just because it's far enough out there. Like if they have 100 pounds to lose in it and they think about doing that in a year, it's overwhelming. So I'll say, well, what's your five-year goal? Well, how much do you really want to weigh? What kind of energy do you want to have? What do you want to be doing? We do that, and then we break it down. Okay, if we're going to be there in 5 years, where do you want to be in a year? Oh, if you want to be there in a year, where do you want to be in the next 30 days or 90 days? And helping them right there at the beginning is going to help them to follow through and get really motivated. And this system will help you to do that. The next piece is movement. We've got a lot of resource for you in the movement. There's going to be a video talking to you about the physiology of movement and the biochemistry of movement and how it affects the insulin receptors. And we also have a fitness video library. Now, let me tell you, this is not a high-budget fitness video library. This is me in my workout clothes, no makeup, hair just pulled back in a ponytail, showing you some stuff. There are also some other videos. I put in one from Teresa Tapp, something called Hoedowns. It's a YouTube video, and she claims that that will help lower blood glucose. I haven't personally tried it, but a lot of people I know have tried it, and they love her stuff anyway, so I gave you a link there. You've got a fitness page, a fitness resource page that I created for you. It didn't get the approval of Stacey yet, so there may still be some typos on it, but I did that last night, got all the extra resources. She was having a horrendous time, and she's moving, and she couldn't get it her system, so I did that late last night. But get people started with moving. Before you even start talking to them about giving up all their favorite foods, which you might have to do, talk to them about doing walking. And I talk about in this fitness resource page that studies have found that periods of 10-minute walks can do just as good and sometimes better than going out for half an hour, an hour. Because people will use that as an excuse. Well, I don't have the time. Do you have time for 5 minutes, 10 minutes? Teach them about bursts. Watch my video on bursts. Teach them about bursts. Bursts are so effective for increasing growth hormone levels, decreasing insulin levels, fat burning, lean muscle storage. Awesome stuff. 30 seconds at a time. If you can convince them to do 30 seconds of exercise starting twice a day and then work the way up from there, you bargain with them. Now, some of the people you work with are already going to be athletes. Great. But some of them are going to be really resistant, and it's super important. Trained muscle is so much more sensitive to insulin than untrained muscle. It's unbelievable, the difference. And then there's a couple of PDFs that have fitness assessments and measurements you're welcome to use with your people. Get a sense of where they're at. How many sit-ups can they do? How long does it take them to walk, you know, a mile, if they can even do that? How far can they walk? How many leg lifts, crunches, squats? There's a bunch of different things in there, plus measurements. Get them to measure their body. They may not see, they may see changes in the measurements before they see changes on the scale. I've had people lose up to 9 inches in a month by doing this. I mean, noticeable differences. And then you're going to get them started on some fun introductory food guidelines. So I'm giving you these things in kind of an order that you can give. You can do them in whatever order you want to. I just think it works best to start them with the, get them on the insulin sensitivity improving supplements, and then start working with these other pieces. And these are things, these are adds, not takeaways, right? Instead of saying, don't eat this and don't eat that, show them about proper hydration. I give you a handout that talks about how to calculate how much to eat, drink, and how often you should drink it. I give you digestion-enhancing strategies. You may have your own. You may already have your own, but I'm just giving you an idea of how I would do this. You may have your own little recipe books with greens and beverages. The beverages are specific beverages I put together to help them balance their blood sugar. So there's some chia beverages and some green beverages and things like that, so just to get them started. And the omega-3 rich foods. You have access to the complete book for the menu makeover. So it's a 250-page recipe guide and an 80-page book for with 30 days of menus, and also the guidelines. So you're welcome to print that out or go through that. A bunch of you got those, so you'll be getting those very soon. So a bunch of you got them as a bonus because you were quick on the trigger. So we'll let you know that you can do that. For those of you who don't and want to have a printed copy of that, we can make that available for a fee, of course. It's done through our fulfillment house. Okay, so these are things to get them started. So right now you're starting easily with them. You're identifying whether they're a good candidate for this. You're looking at some of their current measurements, their assessments. You're getting them to do the glucose. You're doing it yourself first. You're getting to do some fitness, and you can stage this out over whatever period of time you feel works best. You're going to have some very sophisticated clients that are already doing much of this, and the distinction that you make was just getting them to do their blood sugars and adding some of the supplements is going to make all the difference in the world. For others, you're going to have to take them by the hand. A lot of this stuff you're probably already doing with people, helping them to get on more greens and eat more slowly and all that. But I've given you some resources that you can use as guidelines if you don't already have some for yourself. Transforming stress, we already talked about, very vital piece of the program. And sleep, we're going to have a whole section on sleep. I have a video about sleep that I'm going to share with you about all the things that happen in your sleep. You're going to get to understand the chemistry of sleep, the hormones that dance in your sleep. For now, start with some simple things. Sleep is critical. It's been shown that even one night of bad sleep can induce insulin resistance in a healthy person. I discovered that was probably why I had insulin resistance, in addition to I do have the genetics for it. I just did get my genetics back. But I also wasn't sleeping. My diet was really good. So no food within 3 hours of bedtime. That's something that's going to help the support their blood sugar management. It's going to support their adrenals. It's going to help them to produce more blood sugar. It's going to help their leptin levels. We'll go through all that in Module 3. You'll get the details. But for now, get them to no food within 3 hours of bedtime. Get them to do 7 to 9 hours of sleep. And then in Part 3, we'll have a whole sleep resource page with all the everything you need to know about helping them with their sleep. We're almost at the end. Remember, we are trying to optimize the dance that goes on between insulin and glucagon. And as we'll learn when we go further into the program and you learn about the, in part three, about the sleep and the timing, that there's a whole hormone dance that happens. But you're trying to balance this insulin-glucagon dance so that they have at the bottom normal blood sugar, constantly steady throughout the day. It may drop a little bit and then comes back up. Okay, it doesn't go spiking and it doesn't go crashing. You're steady. They're steady no matter how often they eat. They may not be able to spread their meals out. We'll talk a lot more about timing in part three. And I'll share with you the science behind it and why I believe that getting somebody to eat every 2 hours mostly is a bad idea. There are some cases where it's necessary, at least as a temporary measure, while you're balancing the rest of it. But just to blanketly tell everybody, eat every 2 hours to maintain your blood sugar, I think is skirting over the problem. And that's the story. So that's it. It was longer than I thought to present that to you. Because nobody raised their hand and said they'd already been through the module, I felt like I needed to go through it a little bit more detail. When you go in there, you'll be much more familiar with what's there and much more excited about it. The video that's there for there's a couple of videos that I have not put in there yet, and they will be there by the weekend. So that'll give you a little bit more insight and information. And that's it. So I'm going to open it up for questions. I'm going to be sharing with you, as we go through, various and sundry cases that I've had and some of the things that I've done, so it gives you ideas of how to get started and where to get started. So questions on the web would be type them into the question box, and questions here, I will go and look. So raise your hand with a star 2, and I'll take your questions or comments or cases or anything at all at this point. And Bayari, this, I wanted to answer this question. She asked, I wonder if you might think a new sweetener that is in her supermarket in Australia called Norbu, erythritol, and Lohan. I'd have to look at that specifically to see what's in it. But if it's just erythritol and Lohan, there's one like that called Glaconta that we have here, and it's excellent. They have some really, really good documentation on the Glaconta site that shows how that sweetener maintains blood glucose levels. It's really kind of cool. I'm checking out to see that particular one. I don't know if it's something that's unique to Australia. And I typed that link in and it didn't work. Let's see. Okay. Okay. Sorry, my mouse button keeps sticking and I'm not getting back to where I wanted to be. Okay. So it's, I have a dot there before it. That's fine. But the thing to look for, and the reason I'm pulling this up and taking the time, combination of erythritol and Lohan is very low glycemic, very, very fine. However, some of these add a bunch of, I'll just say junk to them, okay? They add a lot of stuff that's not good. Let's see, Norbo Sudu, what is Norbo Read More? And so there's a Lohan that I found that has fructose in it. Now, why would somebody want a low glycemic sweetener like Lohan to have fructose added to it? This is, it's all natural, 0.5 calories per serving, monk fruit. It's a Chinese herb. It's also got good effects on the body. It doesn't say ingredients. I'll have to look at this later, Bayari, because I don't want to take everybody's time to look up the ingredients. But if you want to send me to the ingredient page specifically, then I can look at that. Rhonda wants to know if they're wondering if you can use the meditations with your clients. You are allowed, of course you can guide them through that. That's stuff from the Institute of Heart Math. They have a book on it called Transforming Stress, which is an awesome book. You may have to want to recommend that with your clients. But as far as using my recordings, that is going to be a product that we will have available. And you guys can all sign up as affiliates for that and any other products of mine and be able to share them with your clients and get a check, you know, make some money on the side for that. So, hi, Victoria and Tracy and Eleanor, yes. Tracy, the first time in my life for the last month, I sometimes feel sleepy in the afternoon. I'm assuming it's a blood sugar issue. I had a blood work done today to check my A1C and vitamin D as well as hormones and thyroid. About a true to go. Yay. Test your blood sugar and find out. Once you figure out how to put the Lancet in the machine, funny, yeah, it's pretty straightforward once you figure it out. Sometimes you're all thumbs the first time. It could be a blood sugar issue, and I would be checking your blood sugars. It could be an adrenal issue as well. So that's the kind of thing it could be. And sometimes it's just a simple thing, like certain foods cause your sugar to shoot up for whatever reason. Kind of odd. Christine, I'm not sure about your question when you say, where do you find resources? What do you mean by that? I know on the site I have a resources tab across the top. I'll go there now and let you know. It says part one, part two, part three, part four, part five, support, and then resources and bonuses. I'm hoping that's what you mean. Tracy says she's going to create an office hours day per month where for an hour I'll be taking calls for people who have burning questions regarding health, nutrition, and beauty. That's great. How would I set up a medical disclaimer? Would I put it on the sales page where people will submit their name and email address to opt in? Yeah, that's what I would do. That's what I would do. I would say, you know, this is not intended as medical advice or a diagnosis, and I am simply helping you and educating you. And, yep, absolutely. You're welcome to use the wording from my disclaimer or find one that you like and tailor it for your own needs. Absolutely. That's a great idea, Tracy. Great. Let us know how that goes. Lisa says, yeah, I'm not sure where we asked you to review that, but if we did, then that's supposed to be in Module 2. Next week you'll be getting the magnesium loading and the omega-3 6 document. That's Module 2 pieces. That's all in the nutrition piece. And Patricia said, still having trouble accessing the dashboard. It's up now. It's been slow today, and we've got people working around the clock trying to fix this thing. And I believe me, we want it fixed as much as you do. I know I'm very sorry for the inconvenience. We don't know what's really happening. Okay, let's see. Christine says, I just ran out of ink. Will the slides be available after the presentation? You're in this course. You've invested to be in this course. Everything that we share will be available to you on the website. You've pretty much lifetime access. Until we no longer do this anymore, you can just go back and print it anytime you want. This particular page here where you found the slides, you will be able to go back to that page. And then when Stacy gets back and she can put them all on the website, they'll be up on a website page as well. Tracy says, when I click on transforming stress, I get the following message. Log out and log back in again and see if that helps. Usually when you get that, I've just asked my web guy to change that message. That usually means that somehow the system's logged you out. So it makes you think you're still there because it's cached in your system, but it's logged you out. Heather says, well, we have heard by now if we ordered in time for the quick start bonuses. I don't know if you've been told that you have but there is an electronic version. If you go to the website and you click on where it says, just hover where it says part one, and under that it says start here. That's across the top. So part one, start here, and on that page you'll see access. That's been up ever since you signed up, and that was given to you actually when you first signed up. You got to a page that showed that. So try that. And we'll also be putting a link to that again on the Module 2 page, which is nutrition. Eleanor says, what makes the fat cells secrete leptin when they get full? see, when they get full, just when the fat cells are fat, done, and happy, they secrete leptin. The problem is people say, well, I have plenty of fat cells. Why aren't my fat cells turning off my appetite? Because you become leptin resistant, just like you become insulin resistant. So, yeah, the fat cells, you eat a meal, that's, as soon as anything gets stored into them, it will signal that, okay, good, we have plenty of fat. Ah, that's a good question. Heather wants to know, does no food within 3 hours of bedtime include herbal tea? No, because herbal tea is just, it's really just water. It doesn't cause any changes in your blood chemistry related to food. It doesn't cause an insulin spike unless you put honey in your tea, which you shouldn't do. So, no, that's fine. Lemon water, no problem. And natural calm, no problem. Christine said you can't raise, you can't raise your hand if you're not on the phone, because the only way you can communicate with me if you're not on the phone is by typing in a question, right? So in the, when I ask a question, I say, "Oh, raise your hand if you're on the phone. If you're on the web, you can just answer my question that way." You could say, "Oh, I haven't done that yet," or "Yes, I have." Cassandra says, "How do you sign up for the Transforming Stress System?" Great. What you do is you go into the website. And on the right-hand side, it'll say Your Membership Dashboards. You'll find the one that says Transforming Stress. I'm clicking on it now. It should bring you to a page. It tells you all about it, and it says towards the bottom it'll give you, 30-day audio sequence. So there's a sign-up box on there towards the bottom, I believe. Yeah, towards the bottom of the page. And then right below where it says that, there's a page for each day. And there's the audio and transcripts of those. So if you don't want to get them in your inbox every day, you can just download each one. I have somebody who puts it on her iPod, and she just puts day one, day two. And every month she listens to them again. On day one, she listens to day one. Day 30, she listens to day 30. So it works pretty well. Let me ask this question, and the way you can answer this question is if you're on the phone, you can raise your hand with a two. Let me make sure there's no questions up. No. Okay. You can raise your hand with a two, and if you are on the web, then just type it in. But would anybody be interested in us me creating a video, kind of a tour of the website to show you where everything is? I think it's pretty straightforward, but if you've not done a program with me before, you might be a little bit lost. I mean, generally, we have all your programs that you're in on the right-hand side. Some of the bonuses that you got for being in this program are actually listed on the right-hand side as programs. They're actually separate programs that we have available. So you get them as bonuses, and they'll be there. And you can go there, and then across the top, you'll generally see the links to go to Part 1, Part 2, Part 3, Part 4, Part 5. The only one that's populated right now is Part 1. The others will say coming soon, and usually they're going to be coming according to the schedule that I put up earlier, which is here. Here, I have that up on the screen now. Okay, so right now Part 1 is open, and then next week Part 2, then Part 3, Part 4, Part 5. Okay. Lee in New York says, are there links to the slides you use from the presentation? Yeah, they're right above where you typed in this question. If you go there, it says submit your question, and then above that it says IRSPT dashboard. Above that it says powered by Instant Teleseminar. Above that it says lab testing. Above that it says slides. So you can print out one per page or four per page. Okay, so Bilari, getting back about the Norbu sweetener, it's erythritol and monk fruit. So that sounds fine. That sounds fine. It's a low glycemic sweetener for sure. Bilari says, is Norbu fructose free? The monk fruit contains about 25 to 38% of various carbohydrates, mainly fructose and glucose. However, it's fructose-free, even though it's derived from monk fruit, because only the sweet component called mogosides are extracted from the fruit. Everything else, including the fructose, is left behind. Perfect. Great. Okay, so how do I go to the website? I can only on Facebook. Facebook is totally different. So, Consuelo, so if you go right above where you typed all this in, the question where it says RRSPT dashboard, you click that. If it gives you the message that says you've accessed protected content, we're going to soon change that. I told everybody that's confusing. It means that you're not logged in. So you go over to the right-hand side, and there should be a place where it says log in. I'm going to log out right now just so I can see what it looks like. If I click that link, and then you have to log in. And you were sent in every email we ever send you, we give you your user ID password. Your user ID is the email address you use to register for the program. And the password is some random number that was generated, but you can change it. But you were sent an email when you first registered, and then every reminder that we send has your email in there so that you don't have to go look it up again. So if you go back to the email that allowed you to click the link that got you here tonight, then you go into right above where you submitted your question, and you click on IRSPT dashboard. If you're logged in, you'll get to the dashboard. If you're not, I just logged myself out, so it's going to give me the same message you will get. Then you have to log yourself in. Hopefully my web guy will get that changed tonight, because we get a lot of confusion about that. People don't realize that if you click the link and you're not logged in, you're going to get that message. And sometimes if you leave your computer or you go off and do something else, it will time out. It's some kind of security thing. We're trying to figure out how to get that working. The system is very slow tonight. But we will get it fixed. Okay. It says, you've attempted to access protected content. We appreciate your curiosity. If you go over to the right-hand side, it says you're not logged in. You put your email and your password, and you type in login. Okay, Consuelo, let us know if that works. Tracy says, I logged out and back in again a few times and still cannot access the Transforming System page. Okay, we'll check it out after I get off the call. I'll have Scott log in as you and see what's wrong with your thing or if it's just related to this craziness that's happening tonight. Okay, so Heather had some ideas. We'll pass that on. There's too much stuff to be able to have it all on one page. Bilari asked, do you think these products are okay with somebody with Graves or Rectify Chromium? I don't think there's any problem with chromium, magnesium, or DHA for somebody with Graves. In fact, they could be very helpful. Okay? So I'm going to go refresh. Gina says, I'm conservative about adding fruits to smoothies, especially with high sugar index. Your thoughts? I don't add them at all. And until you check, and everybody's going to be different. I can't even add grapefruit. I mean, grapefruit I can't add at all. But I can't add blueberries to smoothies. But I can eat blueberries if I eat them with lettuce. So it's really going to be a matter of, we'll go through way more detail next week in the session on the foods and the supplements and the herbs. But yeah, you have to be really careful. If you've got people with adding fruits to smoothies and they're getting their sugars to go up, but if their sugars don't go up, they're good to go. Unless they have a candida issue, in which case that's another story. But, yeah, good point, Gina. It's all about testing. Get those glucose meters. Start doing it with yourself. Test everything that you eat and drink. The more you know for yourself, the more you're going to be able to help your clients, the more you're going to be able to answer their questions and give them really good advice. So thank you. Yes. yes, it will definitely be much better. The web was working a couple of days ago. It was whippy, and then it went back down, and we're just trying to get somebody to get in there and fix it. So, because it's a great site. There's great information there. When it works, it clicks, and you get there. Having everything all on one page can be very overwhelming and confusing for people. We used to have it that way, so we just have it set up on a page per module. That's really basically it. So... Okay, no more questions. I have two hands up. We're going to go there. We're going to start with David Lotker in Florida.
Yeah, it's actually. Hi, can you hear me?
I can.
Hi, it's actually Eleanor Lotker. Sorry, but that's the better half. This is actually a multi-part question, trying to really understand what happens to glucose when it gets into the blood. Okay, so the first thing is that, you know, fat cells store glucose, but do the rest of our cells not store glucose? They just use it for energy?
That's right.
That's true? Okay, great.
Yeah, and the fat cells store it as fat, so it gets converted to triglycerides and then stored as fat.
Okay, gets converted and then stored as fat. Okay, yeah. So when the glucose is going around, is there a protocol that it goes to the cells first, then it goes to the all our other cells and our fat cells, or does it go to all our cells at the same time?
Good question. It's in the blood. It's up for grabs, right?
Okay.
So whatever cells are not insulin resistant, right, or the least insulin resistant, or the most metabolically active. So if the glucose is in the system and then you do some burst training or do some exercise, the muscles are going to grab it because they need it at that point.
Okay, and that was one of my questions. So there is glycogen in the muscles and the liver, is that?
Yes, glycogen gets stored in the muscle and the liver. And when there's when you have a demand for fuel, but you don't have enough glucose in the blood to handle that, then the glycogen stores are broken down. And it's said that you have probably enough glycogen stores for a day.
Okay, so it'll break down those glycogen stores, not necessarily the protein, and then it'll go for other sugar.
It depends. That's a good question. It depends, right? So what the trigger is. If the trigger is stress, like you get a cortisol surge because you're pissed off at your boss or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Then the cortisol triggers gluconeogenesis, which is the breakdown of the protein in the muscle. That's where cortisol goes. That adrenaline rush, that quick rush, adrenaline only lasts a short while, that'll go for fat and break down fat.
Okay.
And then goes for the glycogen, the glucagon, which is just that kind of steady state, let's maintain, goes for the glycogen.
Okay, and I think that's getting towards my real question, which I was trying to get to, because I know that if you have a lot of stress, you'll store more belly fat.
Right.
So that has to do with the cortisol is really determining what it wants to break down and where it wants to store.
Yeah, well, the cortisol doesn't store it. So the cortisol just breaks it down. So, but the cortisol prefers muscle. So I like to say your thighs turn into belly fat when you get stressed, and that's not a pretty picture. So you basically, the cortisol causes the breakdown of muscle, causes the blood sugar to go up. But you have no way to spend that sugar. There really isn't a hungry tiger chasing you.
Right.
Right? So you just end up storing it back. So the pancreas sees that raise in sugar. It doesn't know that it was cortisol and it was you eating you. It's like, oh, you just ate a meal, so your sugar went up. So the pancreas then triggers insulin. And the insulin, at the beginning, you know, when you're not insulin resistant, will then just say, okay, let's store this into cells or store it as fat, whichever we need. But what happens when you get insulin resistant is that the cells aren't taking that up. So it sits in the blood and the insulin goes up higher because the pancreas is still sensing that the blood sugar levels are high. So it secretes more insulin and eventually you reach a threshold where it just says, forget it, I'm storing it into fat because the fat cells aren't resistant. It's trying to use it. I mean, the goal of the body is to eat it, use it, not to store it. But then it ends up getting stored, and the preferential place for that mechanism is to store it in the belly fat, the white adipose tissue around your belly.
Okay. Okay, that's just the preferential. That's not stress causing it to preferentially store there.
Yeah, well, the stress causes you to move the sugar out of storage from your muscle and causes a spike in blood sugar, which then causes it to store there. Yes.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, you're welcome. Great question. Okay, we have a Detroit, Michigan cell phone.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Amy.
Hi, Amy. Amy Lundberg?
Lundberg, yep.
Great, great. Hi.
Hi. My question was on reviewing the diet, nutrition resources and everything. And I know going through in the past for the Before Begun program, it got a little overwhelming. So I was going to say, is there like a one or two musts to look through other than the supplements that I could be reviewing? Because creating a healing kitchen is pretty, is that your 205-page document? I can't remember. But
No. The healing kitchen is only, that's a short one. That's just like, that's resources. Like here's some good places where you can buy protein powders and here's some good essential oils and all that. Right. Those little PDFs are mostly short ones. The digestion one is maybe, I don't know, 10 pages, 5 pages. Those are pretty short. Most of those in that resource right now are pretty short.
Okay. Okay. That's what I was just wondering because I know the recipes and all that.
That's huge.
Yeah. Can you just give me one little piece? But this is all short. I can handle this.
What do you want? I'm not sure I'm understanding what you're asking for.
I was just, and I might be getting confused a little bit because I've gone through the Before Begun program, is all the recipes and the 30-day menu planning and all of the supplements and the green drinks and those recipes and all of that.
If you just look at the 30-day recipe guide and menu plan, everything's in there.
Okay.
Except for the supplement ordering stuff, which is a whole separate document, because that has to be updated very frequently. So we don't want to update the recipe guide frequently.
Okay.
Okay.
All right,
yeah.
Thank you.
So I give you the separate little documents because that's how I give it to people in Before Be Gone, before we even give them the big document, just to get them used to things. Because in the big document, we talk about what to avoid, and I just try to stay away from avoiding right at the beginning. I try to get them to really enhance their diet and hope that some things are going to get squished out, you know what I mean, displaced because there's no room for it after they start including these extras.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
Okay. Great. Great question. Thank you. All right. Let's see if there's any more, and then we'll call it a night if not. Looks like we got you. You're Detroit, and then Christine. Oh, Christine, you got on the phone. Great. Hi, Christine.
Good. That's very handy. Yeah, hi. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. So I have a question, which is probably a no-brainer, because some people are not going to have the belly fat, so you're not, you know, they might be slender people.
Yeah, like me.
That doesn't necessarily mean they're, you know, they could possibly have a blood sugar issue.
That's right.
So if they eat a lot of foods that are sugary and eat a lot of foods that are processed mostly, would there be the other symptoms? You just have to ask them if they have any.
You just have to, you ask them about the hungry after meals. Do they get satiated? You ask them about their energy. And do they have those slumps in the afternoon? You ask them about their sleep. You ask them about their brain fog and all the other questions that are on that questionnaire. You know, you just kind of look through that. Yeah, and the belly fat is very common, but I wasn't aware that I had it. Now, I don't have a full-blown, no medical practitioner would tell me that I have insulin resistance because my fasting blood sugar is 85 and my hemoglobin A1C is borderline. It's like 5.5. So it's right before they would say, but my, you know, my triglyceride HDL ratio is perfect, and I have no belly fat, I have no brain fog, I don't have low energy, I feel great, but I have a family history of people just dropping dead of heart attacks for no apparent reason, right? And I was shocked to see that I was insulin resistant, in spite of the fact that I've been on a really good diet for a long time, but I was eating too much fruit and too much sweet fruit and too much fruit in the evening, which was thrown off, and not sleeping. So it's really looking. That's why I have those little mini assessments that you can look at. You might be able to talk to people and say, you know, I know you're not showing signs of insulin resistance right now, but you're showing signs that you're heading down that road.
Mm.
And these are the reasons why. And wouldn't you like to just feel your best and prevent those complications from happening?
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And not everybody is a candidate for this, but everybody pretty much is a candidate to get off the junk and the refined foods. It's just a matter of finding the right motivation, I guess, for them to do it.
Uh-huh.
For me, it was like, holy cow, my mother died when she was this was 2 years ago, so I was about a year younger than when my mother died suddenly of a heart attack, and I was like, well, she wasn't overweight either. You know, she was pretty good, but she smoked and she had all these other bad habits. And I went, well, I have her genes, so I better be careful.
And I have one other question, and that is, so if I know somebody who's just graduated to using the injection.
Using the what?
Injection form of.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I can still manage and help things out.
Oh, absolutely. And you do have to have them make sure that they are monitoring their sugars religiously, because if they're taking the insulin and then you're doing things to improve their insulin sensitivity and getting them on a lower glycemic diet, their sugars can come down, which is funny because I had said that to this guy who was like 220, and I said, just be careful, because as you do this stuff, since you're still on the medication, you might find yourself having really low blood sugar. And he laughed, and then he wrote me back 2 days later. He says, my blood sugar's in the 70s. So it can happen. It can happen quickly. And I've had people go on Before Be Gone, and diabetics who are on insulin and oral blood glucose medication, and within just a couple of weeks had their blood sugars down in the low 100s instead of the 300s. So it can happen quickly. So it's really even more important if somebody's on either insulin or an oral diabetic medication that they monitor regularly.
Okay. And regularly would be like after everything they eat.
I would say after each meal until they get it down. Like they figure out that every time I eat tomatoes and lettuce, my sugar goes to this, but every time I eat this, it goes to that, and they get the sense of it. Then they can be a little bit, more frugal with their strips. But until then, I think so. And the plan is we'll share it next week. 15. They'll get to the point where they could just do it at 45 minutes after the meal and then at 2 hours.
Okay.
But you might want to get them to check also at 3 and 4. Because those hypoglycemic dips will often happen at the 3rd to 4th hour. That's why people say just eat every 3 hours, right? Or eat every 2 hours. Because if you have a dysregulation, that dip is going to happen usually at between the 3rd and the 4th hour.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Great. This will all come together. It's just, just little by little, just getting used to the whole concept of it, and the testing is critical. So if you do nothing between now and our next call, I would say is really master the testing. And learn it yourself, and then challenge yourself to teach it to somebody else.
Cool.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And watch my video. Learn how to interpret it. You may have to watch it 3 or 4 times. I did. Yeah. Okay?
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay. I think that's it. All right. I'm going to check one more time. I'll do a refresh, and then we'll let you all go. Gina said, I see brown rice in your protein. This is a starch. Wouldn't pea protein be a better source? Gina, it's brown rice protein. There's very little carb left to it. However, some people do see that their sugar goes up. Pea protein also has some carb in there. Some people need to just do the hemp protein. So I would say, again, you have people test. I've had a few people that have had spikes with the brown rice protein, but it is the protein component of that. I'm not in favor of the brown rice because it might give them a spike. Lisa says, if a person hasn't eaten for at least 12 hours, what makes the morning count go so high for some? That's a great question. There's a number of reasons for that. For some, it might be that they have dysregulation, that they had a hypoglycemic attack in the middle of the night, which caused a cortisol surge to happen, which caused the glucose to then go up, and then it'll be there. Cortisol itself, if they have a big spike of cortisol in the morning, that causes your body to release some glucose. Let me just pull that off.
So that's another possibility. Stress in the middle of the night, like waking up with a loud noise or with a child that's waking them up in the middle of the night, or if they've had trauma and they wake up in the middle of the night. It's a glucose dysregulation issue. Sometimes having a person do, you'll see it in the fitness level on this program, on the this module, if you have them do like a burst about an hour before bed, 2 hours after their last meal, and you have them do like 2 minutes of pretty all out, you know, as hard as they can do it and last for 2 minutes on a treadmill or exercise bike or squats or something like that, I've seen miraculous decreases in that first morning glucose. So there's a lot of reasons, and usually if it's going high in the morning, it's usually a case where it's been happening for a long time, because that's usually one of the last things to go. So it's really looking at their dysregulation in between, helping them. Taking chromium sometimes helps before they go to bed. That's where doing the once at every meal and once before bed can be really helpful. Consuela said, I did what you told me. You clicked on the link in, I don't understand it. If you are on, is anybody on the login thing? No, nobody's there. Yeah, Consuela, if you want to stay on the line, if you dial in, I can talk to you and talk you through it. But if you click on that link, if you went to Raw Food University, go to the sidebar and click log out and then log in again and see if that helps. And I apologize for these website things. It may all be related to the screwiness of the website, and we're waiting to get that resolved. It should be resolved. I'm making sure it's – if I have to move this program to a whole other website, we'll do that. So, okay, I think that's it. Thank you all for being here. Appreciate it. And we'll see you again next week. Bye-bye now.